Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, August 18th, 2022. Presidio County to help fund vital upgrades for Marfa Volunteer Fire Department by Sam Karras. Sam at BigBendSentinel.com. Marfa. At last Wednesday's meeting, Presidio County Commissioner's Court voted to dedicate American Rescue Plan Act, ARPA, funding for upgrades at the Marfa Fire Station. The $224,000 in grant money will help to expand the facility to better safeguard Marfa's fire engines and equipment. The City of Marfa has also pledged an additional $115,000 over the next fiscal year to help bring all of the department's dreams to fruition as soon as possible. Presidio County has been deliberating over what to do with its ARPA funds over the past year. ARPA is a stimulus program from the Biden administration that aims to help local communities bounce back from economic setbacks as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic. A larger governmental version of the stimulus checks distributed to American households throughout the pandemic. County Judge Cinderella Guevara acknowledged that the challenges faced by the Marfa Volunteer Fire Department were not the only challenges faced by Presidio County residents. The county's ARPA committee ultimately decided that there were other avenues for addressing some of those other issues. For example, seeking out state revolving funds to address dire water infrastructure problems in South Presidio County. The committee's deliberations have been extensive and difficult. It was really hard to get on other projects because everything needs to be a priority, especially public safety, she explained. What made the fire station project appealing to the commissioners was the fact that it was immediately achievable. In April, the city solicited bids for the project and determined the final cost would be around $500,000. Thanks to ARPA, the county was in a position to immediately help make that dream a reality. The full project specifications are available online, but mainly involve using the rest of the department's lot to maximize covered climate-controlled space. Through the region's climate extremes, it's difficult to keep equipment outside and ready to use. For example, during a cold Marfa winter, a fire engine outside must be regularly emptied so the water carried inside. To that end, the Marfa Volunteer Fire Department also secured an easement from the city to create a permanent fire lane, ensuring that they'll be able to enter and exit the facilities as quickly as possible to respond to emergencies. In the wake of major fires like the Rock House Fire of 2011, or more recently, a fire at Napa Auto Parts and Santa Fe Cabinets in Presidio, it's clear that stronger emergency departments in one town benefit the whole region. Jason Ballman, a Marfa City Council member who spoke at length at Wednesday's meeting in support of the county's decision, was elated. "This is super exciting to me as a partnership between these three entities, the county, the city, and the volunteer fire department," he said. "Each one is bringing something very unique to the table." Kat Kane, a Marfa volunteer firefighter, was thrilled that the city and county had worked together to address the department's needs. "We're very grateful and excited for the firehouse improvements, and know it will help us serve the community better," she said. Marfa Independent School District to seek voter approval for a $57 million school bond proposal for new K-12 school. By Mary Cantrell, MKCANTRELL at BigBendSentinel.com. Marfa. This week, the Marfa Independent School District Board of Trustees called an election in which citizens will vote whether or not to approve a $57 million school bond for a new kindergarten through 12th grade campus, a career and technology addition to the high school, and other district-wide improvements. The calling of the election, which will be the largest bond amount ever requested by the district, was approved by all board members who followed the decision with a round of applause at Tuesday night's meeting. The proposal that was recommended and called, if approved, could not only increase academic and career training options, but improve the facility's safety for all students and staff, said Superintendent Oscar Aguero. Voters will decide whether to greenlight the bond initiative in the upcoming November 8th general election. At a recent meeting, the district's bond advisor said property taxes on a $200,000 home, for example, would increase by a rate of $46.67 a month or by $560 annually if the bond proposal passes. The bond would be paid off over a period of 30 years, have an estimated interest rate of 5.2%, and be insured by the Texas Permanent School Fund. The $57 million bond would be in addition to outstanding debt the district is still paying off for two bonds passed in 2003 and 2007, which currently have a balance of just under $6 million and are scheduled to be paid off by 2036. All homeowners may apply for the $40,000 homestead exemptions for their primary residences. Homeowners 65 and older qualify to have their school district property taxes frozen, meaning they will not increase unless significant improvements that add square footage are made on their property. The freeze only applies to primary residences, which must also be homesteaded. The idea to go out for a bond to pay for large-scale infrastructure upgrades was discussed throughout the summer in three community meetings hosted by the district. There, board members and school staff made the case for the bond to the public. School facilities are outdated, they said, hindering a modern learning environment, and were experiencing numerous structural issues that were becoming too costly to continue to repair. Improving school security was also discussed at length. MISD's campus was never master planned and consists of buildings constructed and renovated across decades. Meeting attendance varied and included parents, teachers, city council members, retired staff, community members, and more. Common issues that were brought up were public perceptions of the bond during a time of financial strain due to inflation and increased property taxes, as well as decreased school enrollment. The first meeting included around a dozen individuals, the second even fewer, which led to board members encouraging more to voice their concerns, and the third and final meeting saw around 15 attendees, primarily discussing the financial specifics of the bond. Aguero said the district believed the meetings resulted in a consensus that the bond was recommended. A new K-12 school would house around 300 students and cost around $52 million, accounting for inflation, including demolitions. The school's enrollment has been steadily declining for decades and has 269 students currently enrolled. A new campus, in addition to addressing security concerns, would be complete with all new technology, which some board members suggested might help retain students and teachers. The idea to have an open green space for students and the public as well as open up new and improved facilities for public events, has been discussed. If the bond passes, the junior high and high school campus will be utilized to house all students during the 3-year construction phase for the new school. A bond committee, which would spend nearly a year designing new facilities, will also be established should the bond pass. From now until the election, the district will work to distribute factual information about the bond via handouts and a bond website and encourage citizens to vote on November 8th. For questions or more information regarding the bond election, call MISD Administration at 432-729-5500 or email oageuero@marfaisd.com. Community first and visitor second. Citizens voice hotel occupancy tax and short-term rental concerns. By Mary Cantrell. MKCANTRELL at BigBendSentinel.com. Marfa. City officials and local residents gathered at the USO building this week for 2 separate meetings on hotel occupancy tax, HOT, and short-term rentals, STRs, where staff from the Texas Hotel and Lodging Association, THLA, gave presentations and answered questions. Justin Braggill, General Counsel and Operations Manager for THLA, who has been working with the City of Marfa for many years, presented on rules, regulations, and potential changes in policy at both meetings. The HOT public hearing Monday night saw City Council members gather with around 20 citizens who asked how HOT taxes could better help the local community as opposed to contributing to a never-ending cycle of tourism. Tuesday morning's more STR-focused meeting saw fewer attendees express similar sentiments, frustrated with how little affordable housing is available for local residents compared to temporary overnight stays for tourists. On Tuesday, one local business owner expressed concerns about her staff's ability to find housing in town. Options are sparse due to an overabundance of short-term rentals, she said. I own a business in town. I don't want short-term rentals to go away, said Marfa resident and operator of Margaret's Restaurant, Marielle LaRue. But I also want to be able to live in the town and the staff members I pay to live in the town, whether that be affordable rent, somewhat affordable rent, or purchasing a home. LaRue said affordability is an issue, with her rent going up 33% in the coming year. But availability was the community's top problem. The only reasonably priced homes on the market are getting scooped up by out-of-towners and converted into Airbnbs, she said. The $200,000 to $400,000 homes are the ones that get bought sight unseen. You ask to go and see one, and the real estate agent calls you the next day to let you know, could you move your viewing up? Because she already has 2 offers, said LaRue, wondering if second home owners were even fully aware of the problems they were causing. Beyond a shortage of restaurant staff or activities for tourists to do, Director of Tourism and President of the Marfa Chamber of Commerce, Abby Boyd, wondered aloud that the lack of housing could lead to a shortage of essential services. If locals who work for the county or for American Electric Power, AEP, for example, continue to get priced out. We're not even just worried about our restaurants being staffed. We're worried about people who can work the jobs that make our city function, she said. Braggill stated that while Marfa might be experiencing pains associated with tourism, the industry led to locals having a higher quality of life because of visitor traffic. Tim Johnson said he has lived in Marfa for 20 years And while that might have been the case for a few years, it no longer rings true. It's certainly decreased for the last 5 or 6 years, and it has a lot to do with this, the pressures of young people who are professionals, who grew up here, who can't afford housing to rent, or can't buy or afford long-term housing, said Johnson. In the end, most in the room agreed focusing on creating additional housing or incentivizing homeowners to opt for long-term versus short-term rentals might be the best use of their efforts. Bragiel said he anticipates the 2023 legislative session will also likely see a return of 2019 efforts by the Realtors Association, Airbnb, and VRBO to create a preemption bill which would seek to limit cities' regulations of STRs. He said THLA would continue to back its previous stance that cities have a right to impose reasonable regulations relating to noise and permitting, and to limit the number of non-owner-occupied STRs within city limits. The city should consider showing up to the legislature and advocating for their position as well as track bills that might affect local STR goings-on at texaslodging.com, said Bragiel. Meeting attendees agreed the gathering, while sparsely attended, was a good start to a larger conversation that needed to continue with more community members. I'm not against Airbnbs. I think, mostly, I would like our community to be community first and visitor second, said LaRue. There's enough people who live here that we should all be engaged in what that looks like for our community. On Monday night, Bragiel reviewed the legal uses of hot funds and answered questions from concerned citizens about how the town might better levy the taxes. According to Texas law, hot funds may only be used to promote tourism and the hotel industry, and local municipalities are limited in how they may allocate hot revenue. For the most part, said Bragiel, hot money cannot be spent on permanent infrastructure improvements to the community, like the repaving of city streets. In the city of Marfa, hot grants are used to support arts and cultural activities, historic restoration and preservation projects, and for advertising reimbursements. In the past, the city has also allocated funds to improve the visitor center and the Marfa Fire Station due to its popularity as a tourism site. The HOT Committee, made up of Mayor Manny Baeza, Mayor Pro Tem Irma Salgado, and Boyd, is in charge of allocating funds. The city brought in $710,000 in HOT funds in 2020-21 and budgeted for $700,000 this fiscal year. Bragiel said the state legislature often hears proposals that advocate for expanding local uses for HOT funds. For example, in 2021, there was a bill introduced by Representative Eddie Morales to allow the cities of Marfa, Alpine, and Presidio to use HOT revenue on dark skies initiatives. The bill was inadvertently killed the final night the House was in session due to House Democrats walking out in protest of a voting restriction bill. Bragiel said if reintroduced, the THLA would back the bill. When it comes to HOT revenue, said Bragiel, there are creative uses for the funds that may not be immediately apparent. The city of Marfa used money generated from hotels and short-term rentals to make improvements to the local airport. The city was the first to do so under Mayor Dan Dunlap and helped pave the way for other communities to do the same, said Bragiel. Councilmember Jason Ballman raised the concern that allocations of HOT revenue only promote a cycle of tourism without helping bolster the local infrastructure and services to support those visitors. He wondered if HOT revenue could somehow help fund EMS and medical care, for example. Marfa resident Buck Johnston echoed those concerns. I think the community should really discuss this. We have enough heads in beds. We don't necessarily need to advertise for more tourists, she said. How can we use these funds in a more creative way? Braguiel said alternative hot tax usage was possible, but expenditures have to directly tie back to tourism. He used examples of coastal communities using hot funds to pay lifeguards and Brewster County using them for trash collection. Braguiel said while the tax code doesn't currently allow for hot revenue to be spent on hotel and short-term rental tax collection, THLA was working to change the laws to allow cities and counties to use hot funds for electronic tax collection systems. The Tri-County area has long struggled with the collection of hot taxes as the number of short-term rentals has ballooned. But singular Airbnb owners aren't only to blame. Large lodging operations, such as the Hotel St. George, have failed to pay taxes in the past, and Base Camp Terlingua is currently under fire for neglecting to pay hot taxes for 2 years. Some citizens raised questions about the process of applying and receiving hot tax grants and asked for greater transparency from the hot committee. Boyd said she was brainstorming ways to streamline the process, notifying applicants of deadlines, formalizing processes in writing, perhaps even hosting a workshop to help people with their applications. The HOT Committee makes recommendations on how to allocate HOT grants to the City Council, who ultimately votes whether to approve the proposals. But its capacity is limited. It is composed of just three who rarely convene. There might be a need to diversify the committee and increase meetings, said Boyd. The city's website states the committee is comprised of representatives from local tourism, arts, and preservation fields, as well as Marfa citizens, but currently only consists of city officials and staff. Boyd asked Braguiel whether funding for advertising and a site focused on stewardship and being a responsible tourist, similar to a campaign launched by Fredericksburg, could be helpful moving forward. Braguiel said he believed such a project would qualify for hot funds. He also acknowledged the importance of ensuring Marfa was livable for locals into the future. It's going to benefit the long-term tourism economy for Marfa. Marfa is not going to be a very fun place for people to visit if nobody can afford to live here, said Braguiel. He was met with multiple gruff comments from the audience. We're there. It is heartbreaking. Highland Street house fire caused by faulty chimney, likely a total loss. By Mary Cantrell, MKCANTRELL at BigBenSentinel.com. By Allegra Hobbs, ALLEGRA at BigBenSentinel.com. Marfa. A fire broke out at a Highland Street home on Thursday afternoon, largely decimating the interior and the roof, though the structure remains standing. Still, Marfa Fire Chief Gary Mitschke estimated the extent of the damage he saw amounts to a total loss. I think the house is a loss, in my opinion, with the roof gone and a lot of smoke and heat damage on the inside, said Mitschke. I didn't see anything on the interior that I thought didn't receive some kind of damage from smoke or heat or water. The structure, though still standing, has been rendered unstable, he added. Before the house itself caught fire, an individual renting a casita on the property had been burning items in the home's fireplace. But the house fire was ignited in the attic above the fireplace due to a faulty chimney, said Mitschke. That was the conclusion of an investigator with the Texas State Fire Marshal's office who assessed the site on Tuesday morning, he said, though the marshal's office won't have an official report complete for several weeks. A split in the metal pipe chimney attached to the fireplace, which runs through the attic, allowed the chimney contents to escape, said Michiki. With that chimney the way it was, the condition that it was in, anybody who built a fire in that fireplace, it was going to eventually cause it to do the same thing, said Michiki. It was, in my opinion, inevitable that was going to happen eventually when you had a fire in that fireplace. The Marfa Volunteer Fire Department received word of the fire around 4:30 p.m. and arrived on scene shortly after to see smoke billowing out of three roof openings. The firefighters were battling the flames for hours and didn't leave the scene until after 2 a.m. The Marfa Police Department, Presidio County Sheriff's Office, Marfa EMS, and the City Gas Department showed up to assist the fire department, and some local residents dropped off refreshments for the first responders. Neighbors Joe Morales and Mary Joan Webb, who first notified authorities of the incident, watched as crews worked to put out the fire from a safe distance across the street. The home's owners, Doug and Paige Picora, were devastated and heartbroken by the loss. Many of the items lost in the blaze held personal significance for the couple. "It's all hand done," said Paige. The dining table was handmade by Doug. A mere 72 hours before the fire broke out, Doug had newly refurbished the bathroom. "It is heartbreaking," said Paige, who was quick to add, "It is just stuff." But some of the items lost were sentimental in nature and truly irreplaceable, she said. The couple used to own the now-shuttered bar Padres, along with David Beebe, Democratic candidate for Presidio County Commissioner Precinct 4, and the Highland Street house had showcased framed posters of the bands that had played there. Paige said Doug was at the site on Wednesday to assess whether any items inside the home can be salvaged. Photo courtesy of neighborhood resident. A house on Highland Avenue caught fire last Thursday, and local first responders rushed to contain the incident. Marfa Fire Chief Gary Michiki estimated the extent of the damage amounts
to total loss. This is Jack. I'm reading the Fort Stockton Pioneer. FSISD accountability ratings revealed. For the first time since 2019, the TEA released official accountability ratings for school districts and campuses statewide on August 14th. The TEA ratings showed that the Fort Stockton Independent School District is rebounding from the pandemic in a rapid manner and are nearing pre-pandemic academic performance levels. Fort Stockton ISD received an overall rating of a B, 81, and were led by the intermediate campus, which received a B rating of 82. To me, it's a monumental achievement to have passed every campus in year one coming off of COVID. It's a testament to how hard our people worked and to the early results of the system changes that we put in place, Superintendent Zamora said. Apache Elementary received the second highest score with an 81, and the middle school campus was third with a 78. The high school campus maintained their C status with an overall score of 76, while Alamo received a 73. Ratings were not given out by TEA in 2020 and were not officially recorded in 2021. Zamora explained that star testing scores is a primary factor for rating individual campuses. Star testing is the bulk, he said, of campus ratings. It's just that there are a few different pathways, and the state looks at which pathway the campus did best on and gives you that. As for the district rating, TEA states that the score measures how much students are learning in each grade and whether or not they are ready for the next grade. It also shows how well a school or district prepares their students for success after high school, in college, the workforce, or the military. According to Zamora, all campuses except the high school would have failed if a rating was given out last year. The lone exception was the high school, which would have received a C. High school was a C last year, None of them were rated officially. They were rated using the state's calculator system. The campuses would have failed except high school. I provide that to the board. Compared to the 2019 accountability ratings, Fort Stockton ISD scored 2 points higher in star performance, according to the scale score, and improved from an F in academic growth to a B. The district was only 3 points behind the school progress score from the last official rating in 2019. Zamora believes that the academic improvement will continue to improve with the new systems and administrative structure in place. The teachers and kids deserve a ton of credit because they performed. Of course, the hard work that our administrators put in with the HB 4545 regarding the additional tutoring requirements. All of that together is what led us to this point. It's a very solid foundation that has been laid for us to build on. Just like I told them, you know we can do it under the worst circumstances. Now let's go through and implement what we've started in an entire year and show what we can do. Chevron launches digital initiative. Chevron's Mid-Continent business unit is excited to announce the launch of Permian Proud, a pioneering digital initiative that aims to shine a light on what makes the Permian Basin an essential region of the world and a special place to live, work, and play. As a company that's been part of this region since 1925, Chevron knows firsthand the unique character and history of this community. The focus of Permian Proud will be on the news and information that makes all of us proud to live in this region. Permian Proud will highlight the region's unique past, present, and future as a vital supplier of the oil and gas that enables human progress. The online publication will showcase and uplift the achievements and efforts of local residents and organizations. The highlights will include content from the Fort Stockton Pioneer. Anyone in the region wanting to get the word out to the public on events, fundraisers, initiatives, and more is encouraged to do so through Permian Proud. As the public will further glean from our stories, it is the efforts of the whole region, each and every contributing member, which makes us Permian Proud. We want to do our part to highlight this important monument, important moment in history, and to amplify the many positive developments happening across the Permian Basin, said Ryder Booth, Vice President of Chevron. Permian Proud will reflect the people, organizations, companies, and industries of the Permian Basin that are uplifting our communities and impacting our nation and world. Read stories and learn more by visiting permianproud.com. City of Fort Stockton helps with West Texas Food Bank. The City of Fort Stockton assisted the West Texas Food Bank last week with volunteers from the Police Department, Sanitation Department, Water Department, Parks Department, and Code Enforcement. I was happy to see how many people showed up from the City of Fort Stockton, Director Lucia McIntosh said. We usually have Pecos County EMS volunteers, but a lot of times they'll get called out for medical emergencies and have to leave. The City of Fort Stockton has been our biggest group of volunteers to date, and we're thankful for all the time that they put in. When asked how she got involved with the West Texas Food Bank, she said, "To be perfectly honest, it was my Amy Owens who first asked me if I wanted to help with food distribution. For 1.5 years, it's been me and Amy with volunteers like Ms. Baker, Carlos Gomez and his kids, a couple of employees from Citibank, Pecos County EMS, and occasionally my husband and my kids." The West Texas Food Bank Community Outreach Program takes place every second Thursday at the Rooney Park from 10 a.m. to noon. McIntosh Gilbert says the monthly event gets 200 to 300 cars every month. People will start lining up at 2 a.m. no matter the weather, she continued. We do this come rain or shine because people need these groceries. A lot of the food comes from HEB. These resources are available. All people have to do is show up. We also have boxes specifically for senior citizens. If anyone would like to volunteer, we could definitely use the help, and we typically always set up at Rooney Park near the large community hall. The city was a huge help this month, and after talking with Efren Acosta, it sounds like the city would be interested in helping us out again in the near future. Museum receives top 10 recognition. The Museum of the Big Bend is ranked number 9 among the True West 2022 top Western museums, according to a press release from True West magazine. It will be featured in the September issue, hitting newsstands on September 10th. The National Cowboy and Western Heritage Museum of Oklahoma City took top honors. True West nodded to the museum's major expansion project, including a gallery dedicated to the art of Tom Lee, one of the premier horse and cattle artists of the Southwest, as one of the factors in their decision. The Museum of the Big Bend is already a first-class art and history museum, said Bob Bowes-Bell, True West executive editor, but it is moving forward into an exciting future, preserving Old West history and culture and presenting it to the world. There's no question, the Museum of the Big Bend is a top Western museum. This is the 17th year True West has presented this annual award, led by Candy Moulton. Editors base their selection on criteria evaluating exhibits, facilities, multimedia and online accessibility, events, and promotion of historic or cultural resources. For more information about the Museum of the Big Bend, visit museumofthebigbend.com. Burial Fest, coming up in September. To qualify for a Humanities Texas grant, a Humanities advisor must be involved in the planning and implementation of the activities. The Humanities advisor for Burial Fest will be Dr. Nicholas Garcia, a Fort Stockton High School graduate, class of 2004, who went on to earn his Ph.D. in Educational Leadership and Policy Studies from the University of Texas at San Antonio. Garcia will moderate two discussions during the Burial Fest weekend. The first discussion will be on Saturday, September 17th from 11 to 1 p.m. at the Butts Education Center. The topic will focus on the educational experience of the Hispanic community prior to integration. The second discussion will be held on Saturday from 5 to 6 p.m. at Joe's Place. Descendants of some workers who came to Fort Stockton through the Bracero program in the 50s will tell their firsthand experiences of this work program that added greatly to Fort Stockton's economic development. When asked to comment about why he agreed to return to Fort Stockton and take part in the Burial Fest, Garcia said about his and his family's educational experiences in Fort Stockton, "How do you measure one's success? How do we measure our own success? For some, success means earning a college degree or being the first in their family to do so. For others, it's getting out of a socioeconomic bracket. For me, success meant fulfilling the dreams my parents wanted for me, a happy life. As a Fort Stockton native, I carry the values of this beautiful town has instilled in me. Your reputation will always follow you, and the way you treat others is how people will remember you. I could never have dreamed of living this successful life if it wasn't for my childhood experiences and the belief others had in me. I'm proud to say my parents have two children who have earned doctoral degrees and identify as proud Americans from Mexican ancestry. For all the youth who have dreams of their own and wish to be successful, just know that anything is possible with faith, belief, grit, resilience, and gumption. The importance of knowing your history and the impact it has on the future can determine how you approach your goals of being your own success."
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahans News for Thursday, August 11th. Guy Clark to be honored with mural. The story was written by Jan Cranfield. A mural of Guy Clark, Nashville Songwriter Hall of Famer, will be painted on the south side of the Senior Center Golden Treasures building on the corner of 2nd Street and Stockton Avenue. Ward County Commissioners gave their approval for the mural project presented by Teresa Burnett, Monahan's Chamber of Commerce Director, at Monday's regularly scheduled meeting. Burnett submitted 6 mural examples to show possible wall paintings to honor Guy Clark. Clark was born in Monahans on November 6, 1941, and lived with his grandmother, Rosie Clark, at her 13-room shotgun hotel until he was about 13 years old. The hotel sat on the site now occupied by Ace Hardware. He moved to Houston with his father in 1950, but returned home to Monahans every summer. Clark's aunt, managed the Green Frog Cafe, which was located at 119 East Seeley until late 1954 or early 1955. Clark wrote many songs that were recorded by popular artists such as Johnny Cash, Jerry Jeff Walker, Ricky Skaggs, George Strait, Vince Gill, Brad Paisley, Alan Jackson, and Kenny Chesney, to name a few. Johnny Cash recorded Clark's Texas 1947, which was included on his album Look at Them Beans, and later released as a single, which was number 35 on the U.S. Billboard country charts for the week of January 10, 1976. Clark's song, Desperados Waiting on a Train, was sung by the Highwaymen, Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, and Kris Kristofferson on the 1993 Farm Aid concert. Quote, "We submitted 6 drawings to the commissioners showing what the mural could look like when finished, but the artist and mural committee will make the decision about the final drawing," Burnett said. In other business, Ward County Judge Greg Holley presented the proposed 2023 budget to the commissioners in another item of business. Quote, "The tax rate has stayed in the 60-cent and 70-cent range for the past 30 years, since paying off debt in 1991, so I am proposing the tax rate remain at last year's rate of 69 cents for the coming 2023 year. This will give homeowners tax stability," Holley said. "This proposed budget has a significant commitment to the hospital in terms of an increased subsidy from $1.5 million to $2.5 million, as well as $4 million of this budget compared to the current $1.5 million set aside for new hospital construction and renovation. Also, the proposed budget covers a 5% raise for county employees and additional road funds at $1.2 million per precinct. Funds have been set aside for the new jail, and bids will be accepted for concrete work at the Event Center Park. Another item on the agenda was renewing the agreement with West Texas Center's MHMR to continue providing mental health care to Ward County residents. The county approved funds totaling $12,696 to assist in maintaining the operation of Ward County Mental Health Center. In regular business, the commissioners approved paying the bills for the county. The final agenda item, commissioners set the upcoming election date and offices needing to be filled. The election date has been set for November 8th, and the county offices on the ballot will be the Ward County Judge, 143rd District Clerk, Ward County Clerk, Ward County Treasurer, Ward County Commissioner Precinct 2, Ward County Commissioner Precinct 4, Ward County Justice of the Peace Precincts 2 and 3, Ward County Justice of the Peace Precinct 1 and 4. Present at the Monday meeting were Commissioner Precinct 1, Tino Sanchez, Commissioner Precinct 2, Larry Hanna, Commissioner Precinct 3, Dexter Nichols, Commissioner Precinct 4, Eddie Nelms, and County Judge Greg Holley. The next regularly scheduled commissioners' meeting will be August 22nd at 9:30 a.m. at the Ward County Courthouse, 400 South Allen Street. Drought kills 400-plus fish at Perch Pond. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Perch Pond reopened on Wednesday morning after being closed for the last 2 weeks because of extremely low water levels. Monahans has been experiencing extreme drought conditions, and Ward County has been mentioned as one of the driest counties in the state. Ward County measures in the 700 to 800 water balance, which is extremely dry. In June, the Ward County Commissioners approved a declaration of disaster for Ward County, which stated that Ward County is under imminent threat of severe damage, injury, or loss of life or property resulting from the threat of wildfires due to drought and other weather-related conditions. City of Monahan's Director of Public Works, Richard Covington, told the news, quote, "A citizen notified City Hall of a large amount of fish dead in Perch Pond," end quote. City officials evaluated the pond and contacted the Ward County Texas A&M AgriLife Extension and the local game warden. Covington decided to close Perch Pond on July 26th. Quote, "I took pictures of the water and fish in the pond and originally thought the fish died due to the blue-green algae," he said. After speaking to the game warden, Covington said, quote, "It was determined the fish were dying due to a lack of oxygen in the water because of the low water levels and not the algae," end quote. Over the last 2 weeks, around 7 million gallons of water was pumped into the pond slowly to get water levels back to environmentally safe levels. Quote, "A fire hose was hooked up to the fire hydrant so the water could run down through the grass to filter out any impurities from the water," end quote. Covington said he estimated around 400 to 500 fish died in the pond. Upcoming forecasts do not predict rain for Monahans anytime soon, but as the rainy season approaches, Covington said he is hopeful this will carry the pond over until we get some rain. Perch Pond is located at 2200 South Aura Street and is open to the public from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. A Texas fishing license and freshwater endorsement is required for people fishing who are age 17 or older. Monahan's Volunteer Fire Department saves RV after closed catch fire Saturday. A small fire was doused last Saturday evening by the Monahan's Volunteer Fire Department in a small RV located in the 1000 block of South Bruce Street. Quote, "A pile of clothes caught on fire inside the RV, but we were able to put the fire out with a water hose. If the pile of clothes wasn't so big, it may have burned the RV down, but it burned the clothes first," MVFD Fire Chief Randy Crabtree said. Fire officials weren't clear on how exactly the clothes caught on fire. The owner of the RV, Joanna Gray, was in the RV when the fire began, but was out by the time fire units arrived. Crabtree added there was minimal damage to the RV as a result of the fire. Gray lost her home, which was located in front of the RV in mid-May, to a fire which was believed to have begun in the kitchen by the back door. By the time the firemen arrived on scene, the home was completely consumed. Gray is also facing prison time after being indicted last month on charges of driving while intoxicated, third or more, a third-degree felony. The case has yet to go to trial. Ward Memorial Hospital passes Medicare COVID checkup. The story was written by Jan Cranfield. In the regularly scheduled Ward County Hospital Board of Managers meeting held Thursday, August 4th, Hospital Administrator and CEO Leticia Rodriguez informed the Ward County Hospital Board of Managers of a COVID-19 compliance check performed by Medicare Medicaid. The surprise visit was from a Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, CMS, representative on July 26th. According to the government's rules and regulations, all employees must have COVID vaccines and/or boosters, and all must wear a mask when working in the hospital facility. Exact records must be kept on each employee as to when the vaccine was taken and/or a booster is required. Quote, "She walked all over the hospital checking everything and only found one infraction that was reported as a deficiency. A new employee, whose vaccination waiting period was not up yet, was not wearing an N95 mask. She was only wearing a surgical mask. But we passed everything else," Rodriguez said. Also, On the agenda for approval was an agreement for a clinic ER coverage by Don Hillman. Hillman, a physician assistant at Ward Memorial Hospital, entered an agreement permitting Hillman to fill in as needed at the clinic and/or emergency room. Currently, Hillman works full-time in Rankin, but will work at the clinic on Fridays and be available for weekend ER work. The agreed pay rate will be $90 an hour, effective on July 31st. Board managers present for the Thursday, August 4th meeting were Lisa Stewart, Angel Fuentes, Gerald Carlson, John Fawcett, Mickey Mitchell, and Administrator CEO Leticia Rodriguez. Absent from the meeting was Larry Hunt and Jeff Burdick. The next regularly scheduled meeting will be 6:15 p.m. on August 18th at the Hospital Physical Therapy Boardroom at 420 South Ike Street. The public is invited to attend the meeting and express any concerns they may have about the hospital operation. Council meeting canceled again. According to City of Monahan Secretary Tanya Todd, the regularly scheduled council meeting, which would have been set for Tuesday, August 9th, was canceled in advance of the meeting because, quote, City Manager Rex Thee and City Manager Assistant Frank Heslin were not able to attend the meeting, end quote. This was the second time in a row the council meeting has been canceled. The July 26th meeting was canceled because they did not have a quorum. At least three voting members of the council must be present to establish a quorum, she said. According to Todd, quote, City Charter states the city must hold at least one council meeting a month, end quote. Items on the July 26th and August 9th agendas will be postponed to the next council meeting on August 23rd.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.